Hello, you are listening to Octahedron, episode 6. It's the 1st of January 2017, and we're coming to you from a secret location in Berlin. As usual, we can reveal the secret location. It's Ethereum at Dev Office, and no one is here. So we have today with us our guest, Zuko. Say something.
Hello,
and,
I'm Zuko.
And my co-host, Dirk.
Yes, I'm here also, although I'm not completely here.
Okay, partly here.
Yeah.
So, Zuko, can you introduce yourself in a way you haven't introduced yourself before to Epicenter? Because we're going to be referencing Epicenter, because you already did an awesome podcast with them.
Well, my name is Zuko, and I... I'm 42 years old, and I'm pretty sure I didn't tell Epicenter that, so that means I was born in 1974, and I'm really excited to be in 2017.
Okay, so basically you told them about your cypherpunk history, and I decided to tell you more about maybe your background and skill set, and what other stuff you worked on apart from what you're working on now.
Things that I've worked on that I didn't talk to Epicenter about because they weren't.
Okay, forget
things.
About Epicenter. Just like, what did you talk? What did you work on apart from Zcash?
Apart from Zcash, like in the past.
Yes.
So that is, I spent almost all my time working on Zcash, a little bit of time working on some health theory stuff.
Oh, we can talk about it in the end, like to add personal touch. So is your background in what? Is it networks, cryptography, programming?
Yeah, I have a lot of experience with cryptography and programming. Sort of the practical implementation or usage side of cryptography. More than the theoretical side of cryptography. Cryptography is a really deep subject. There's a very tall mountain of abstract ideas and mathematical results in the field of cryptography.
That's theoretical cryptography or research.
This is probably true in all fields, that there's a spectrum between theory and practice. But it seems to me that in cryptography, the spectrum is extra wide. There's a deep field of theory and theory upon theory. And the boundary or the border between the world of theory and the world of practice is an interesting, complex, dynamic border.
So your job is basically to pick some practical stuff that can be useful.
Yeah.
And try to implement it.
Yeah, that's right. And Zcash is an experiment in picking something from the part of the field of cryptography that was previously considered theoretical. And so I think it might be some of the most advanced and novel cryptography to get used for anything in practice on the internet.
So this is zero knowledge proofs, right?
Well, yes, and more specifically the SNARK.
Okay.
SNARK kind of zero knowledge proof.
So should we start with just like explaining what?
Yeah, I would be interested. So this zero knowledge proof is known for quite a bit, but these ZK SNARKs, they are quite recent, right?
Right. Yeah.
And is there any implementation of zero knowledge proof without SNARKs that you are aware of? So is that practical already somewhere?
I'm not sure. Nothing comes to mind.
Yeah.
General purpose zero knowledge techniques, although specific things like if you make a digital signature to sign like a transaction, there's a sense in which that's a zero knowledge proof of a specific statement.
Because I don't have to reveal what I signed until...
Yeah, the signature doesn't...
necessarily reveal.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Cryptographically reveals nothing beyond that you signed this specific assertion, but I don't know if a usage of generalized zero knowledge proofs, but there may be some.
Because the topic came up several times for me, at least. I heard about zero knowledge proofs long before I heard ZK SNARKs, but I only recently heard about an example for me that made it like that I have a mental model of what zero knowledge proofs mean. And I would be curious if you have a way to give me a mental model how ZK SNARKs work. Is there an analogy in the real world that would fit?
Yeah, can I like intervene for a second? Because again, last time I mentioned Epicenter, with Meher you discussed, you came up with this allegory of using spreadsheets, and you spoke about like a fourth column in a spreadsheet, and people, I don't know, maybe for some people it's brilliant because they can imagine spreadsheets, but maybe let's come up with something else. How would you explain it?
Actually, the spreadsheet didn't explain ZK SNARKs at all.
Questions here. I don't think I can answer either of them very well.
Okay.
One is how to
analogize ZK SNARKs, and the other is how to explain or analogize the Zcash design. I can kind of grope around. It's kind of embarrassing. I hate it when someone asks me to explain something like this, because unless you know, if you knew this stuff really well, then I'd be more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Because then if I said something incorrect, you'd be
correct. Ah, okay.
But since
we don't
really know this case SNARKs very well. Yeah, so it makes me kind of uncomfortable.
We have other topics, or I at least have other topics.
Okay.
Maybe you come back to it.
I need to study this more and find a good way to think about it so I understand it better to answer this kind of question.
Okay, cool.
What don't you study?
Dare to analogize ZK SNARKs, then let's not analogize them. Sorry. How would you then describe the design of Zcash? Maybe you're more comfortable with that, because we want you to be comfortable.
I would just describe it as encrypted Bitcoin.
Okay. And why do we need that?
Why we need Bitcoin? Because with clear text Bitcoin, you can lose privacy and you can lose fungibility.
Yeah, I always say when people refer to Bitcoin as anonymous, that I'm gonna hit them with a chair. I know you don't approve violence, but but I always use this. I always use this analogy. It's not an analogy. I always promise I'm going to use an inflatable chair. you know, you can get one of those for the swimming pool.
I see. So it would be symbolic.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, I came across before this podcast, because I was like panicking and trying to read up about all this zero knowledge proof stuff. And I came across a paper, which is from... a long time ago, I think. I don't know how long time ago. Is how to explain zero knowledge protocols to your children.
It's a classic.
So it's a classic paper, and we're going to reference it so you can read it. It's not too long, and it gives an analogy of a cave, and it's a whole story of Alibaba and so on. So yeah. So okay, great. So we have our first reference.
Yeah, but it's not. It's only half of it, right? I mean,
yeah.
Zero knowledge is one thing, and SNARKs are a total different thing because they are almost non-interactive and try this cave analogy without interaction.
It's interactive thing.
These three different things that I conceive of it. You know, next time we do something like this, let's bring along an expert cryptographer who understands this stuff so that we can get answers. There's the interactive zero knowledge proofs described in the paper about the cave.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the non-interactive zero knowledge proofs. And then the thing that is kind of mind-boggling to me about SNARKs is that they're a proof of an execution of a program.
Yeah.
That's the way I conceive it. So it's like if you had a program and you expressed it as a circuit with a series of logic gates like ands and ors and nots, and then you said something like the output wire is going to be some kind of cryptographic value which proves that you
ran the whole program with given inputs, but it's not the output.
It proves the output wire is say there's an OR gate. So there's two wires coming in, and the output wire should be true if either or both of the input wires is true. Right? And then you say, now we're going to make some kind of crypto system where you prove that you know some assignment of bits to the inputs, which will result in this output being true. Well, that's obvious and trivial, but if you can do that without revealing any information about which assignment you knew, and then if you can stack all the other kinds of gates and make it sufficiently big that you can express interesting programs, then I think that's a good analogy to SNARKs. So the effect is you prove that you knew some assignment of the inputs that resulted in a certain output.
Assignment is like a puzzle or something, a shared puzzle.
Yeah, assignment means you knew some set of sort of like true and false values to assign to each of the input wires of the circuit.
So as I understand it, a proof is proof that a certain calculation has been done or that a certain program has been run with certain input parameters. And it's not the output of the program.
Well, there's kind of a subtlety there.
You could define it as the output. Yeah.
The way I think
okay.
Is that you get the output along with a proof.
Yeah. Okay.
The output came out, but that the output is equal to an output that you could get out of this circuit given some possible.
Yeah.
A proof that the output is what you get out of the circuit given some input that you knew.
Yeah. Because that is the inputs that you get from the Bitcoin side, right?
Wait, what?
Isn't that the the unspent outputs? Isn't that what you need as an input for this calculation? That's also obfuscated, right? Or encrypted. Because you don't know where the money came from.
That's not the kind of inputs and outputs I was thinking
of. Yeah, okay.
I was thinking of a general purpose circuit. But you are right that in order in Zcash itself, you want to prove that, what did you say just now?
Yeah, that you are allowed to spend certain outputs. It was New Year's Eve yesterday, and we are all a bit dizzy, I think.
Yeah, we're not going to hit 2017 full speed. We're going to ramp up slowly. So So in Zcash, what you want to prove is that you are authorized to spend one of the unspent notes.
Which are also obfuscated in a way so that you cannot trace them like you can in Bitcoin.
Right. So what okay. you want to conceal is which note you are authorized to spend. So let's say for simplicity that there's only one note that you know the secret key to.
By the way, these notes are the same notes that Pesco talked in his spoke about in his
yes,
talk.
Pesco.
Another reference for our
yeah, another reference that we're gonna put in the notes. It's a Pesco talk.
Okay.
The talk that okay. he gave it at 33C3 was about this, and those are the same mm-hmm. notes. So notes are like they used to be called coins.
Ah.
But that
okay.
makes people think that they have a fixed denomination, like 1 euro, two euro, 20 cent.
Hmm.
So we changed them from coins to notes because you can have an arbitrary amount, like 12 and a half.
Written on the note.
Right.
Or whatever
okay.
There. But they're one use things. A note gets created, and when it gets created, it has a value written on it, like 99.3 Zcash. And then only one time it can be spent.
Mm-hmm.
So suppose you know the secret key that allows you to spend one note, and there's 1,000 notes in existence. So what we want to prove is that you do know the secret key, which allows you to spend one note, and what we want to conceal is which one.
Okay.
Does it mean it's in an unlimited... that can be a dumb question. Does it mean that it's unlimited amount of Zcash in the system? Because every time I spend a note, it's a new one, or is it... Is it like in Bitcoin, you give me a note and I can spend it now?
It is like in Bitcoin, but when I use up my note that has 99.3 Zcash in it,
mm-hmm.
and I want to give you 99.3 Zcash, then what happens is you create a new note.
Uh-huh. So it's more like in... what is this old, not Hashcash, the, you know what I'm talking about, DigiCash, that was somehow similar but centralized. You would, every time I'm going to send you a transaction, you're going to create kind of the new, my coin going to expire and then the new coin going to be, going to come to existence?
Yes. Yeah,
so, right.
So similar to how Bitcoin actually works. If I have 99.3 Bitcoin and I want to give it to you, it's really that there's a new thing in the world, a new immutable append-only data structure, which you know the secret to and I don't, and that new thing confers the right to control 99.3 Bitcoin, and my old thing no longer does.
And what if I don't, if you don't want to spend the whole note to Xenia, but only a fraction of it? Then that it's the same mechanism that you get a transaction pointing back to your wallet that has the change, or?
That's a very good question. And the answer is, it is the same mechanism, but it retains full privacy because
yeah.
Nobody who isn't authorized can see the identity of where the change went.
And that's interesting because as a user, when I spend Zcash to one of my other addresses, it took a while until I got the change back. And that is because, why?
That reminds me, I need some euros. Do you buy a Zcash?
Yeah, sure.
How much is it at the moment?
Give me a better price.
We can do that after the show.
Yes, totally.
I'm mining my Zcash currently.
I'll just buy some Zcash from like Zcash dude, right? Brag about it. No, I can't brag about it because it's so private, right? No one will know.
Receive it on a transparent address.
Yeah, if you chose to make it transparent.
Yeah, selective transparency. So I only buy Zcash from you if we choose selective transparency, and then I can brag about buying Zcash from Zuko.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely, we could make it a publicly visible transaction so that there's a hyperlink where you
point your friends to.
Then you, I don't have to, you don't have to give me a good price. Yes. Then it's going to be a market price.
But then there is a limitation deal. To that, which is that there's not, in Bitcoin, if we did that, there would be a full, an unbroken trail from that transaction leading back to previous transactions.
Yeah.
And, with Zcash, if we do that, you can point to the transaction that's on a public website so that your fans could see, oh, this is the one where Xenia got the Zcash coin from Zuko at time. But there isn't going to be a fully unbroken trail leading back in history showing where I got it and where the person who gave it to me got it.
Yeah, so basically I can't sell it to someone and then say, look, this is like a Zcash I bought from Zuko, and... But they can't brag about it anymore. No, but then I'll get famous as well, so they're going to be well happy buying it from me.
Yeah, but you could. And you, so there could be an unbroken trail showing both of those hops. Okay? There could be those two hops, both visible and connected to each other in the public website, in the public blockchain. But at some point, at least... going backwards, where I got it from is not visible on the public blockchain.
Mm.
Or going forwards, you might transfer it to someone without making that transaction visible. So
at some point, it will be bounded, the history.
Yeah, and by the way, our dear listeners probably know, if you want to do transparent transactions, just use Bitcoin. And if you want to do privacy, do Zcash, right?
What we're talking about here is doing a transparent transaction with Zcash, because I have a Zcash in my pocket and I want 50 euros.
Okay, but we don't have to talk about transparency, because I always say there is like enough cooks in the transparency kitchen at the moment, and maybe not enough cooks in the privacy kitchen.
Mm.
So... that's why, yeah, it's nice,
but
to have you.
Well,
I'm interested in the selective transparency. I think that selective transparency might be better than transparency. There's a lot of really good, important, valuable things about transparency, right? At all levels, or at various levels. Like, you might have a club, and you might want either the public or
members of the club or the local community or someone to be able to view and audit the club's transactions. That's the kind of thing that we're trying to support with selective transparency. And at first blush, that's the kind of thing that Bitcoin's radical, always-on transparency is good for. But on closer inspection, I'm not sure it's radical, always-on transparency is right for those kinds of applications.
Radical transparency is always not right for everyone. It's like my friend Walter says, and he quotes someone I don't remember, transparency for the powerful and privacy for the weak. But I don't know, a bit cheesy intervention.
Yeah, there's
powerful are really good at
privacy, transparency
concerning some behavior. That's kind of what it means to be powerful.
Yeah, there is a slight variation, which is part of, I'm not sure if it's really part of the Hacker Manifesto, but at least it's part of the CCC Manifesto, which is, and I have to translate it now, because it's, yeah, I can give it in German first. Private Daten schützen, öffentliche Daten nützen.
That rhymes.
So it means something like protect private data, but make government data available. I would say that's because make public data available doesn't make sense because it's already public. But öffentliche Daten nützen is something like make the state or the government more transparent. So we can see what they are doing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this plays into it. Yeah. One thing about this transparent addresses, there are no mobile wallets. Do we have an agenda? No, right?
I have an agenda. I always have an agenda.
So is mobile on your agenda for this show?
I know from other sources that actually I really like that Zuko is like blatantly honest about what he's comfortable and not comfortable talking about.
And, I don't know. Did we speak about that before?
I mean, I know that you mentioned on a different podcast that you're not the best person to talk about mobile clients. Or you said that...
Yeah. Okay, I mean, the main problem is currently computational power, isn't it? I mean, the...
There's a couple different technical issues. One is the SPV approaches about how to minimize the amount of state.
Okay. It has to keep up to date with. To be able to verify? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In order to read the blockchain reliably or learn about transactions that it needs to know about. And the other is what computation has to do in order to produce new private transactions.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting engineering challenge. The current state with the currency cache protocol is that it's very computationally expensive to produce private transactions. It's totally cheap to produce the transparent ones, just the same as with Bitcoin. It's the exact same math and implementation and everything. But for the private ones, it takes about 45 seconds on a laptop. And no one's really tried it or measured it for what it would take to do it on a phone. So we do have quite a few ideas about how to optimize that process. I'm guessing my engineers may be annoyed at me if I start
promising things shooting from the hip here, but I think we might be able to reduce the computational cost with a year or so of engineering effort and probably a hard forking protocol upgrade by a factor of 4, maybe 4 to 10, maybe. So that would get it down to kind of more tolerable for desktop users, but it would still probably be intolerable for cell phones, even if we did get it down by a factor of 10.
Well, they also get faster.
Maybe. It's not clear that cell phones are... It's not clear to me that cell phones are going to get a lot faster because the main thing they need to get is more power efficient.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I guess most of the power drain is the light from the screen more than anything. But they don't want to get faster if it's going to increase their power drain.
Right.
Mm. A lot of the engineering of the CPUs of cell phones is more about, you know, making videos and games play efficiently, so it's video-specific hardware, power saving, and keeping costs low. So we do have one cryptographic idea for how to support that better, how to empower people to use cell phones for Zcash better, which is to extend and upgrade the protocol so that you can have a server. Well, it could be your laptop, or it could be a server owned by you or owned by a company or whatever. But the server is there to assist and to do the expensive computation, the generation of the zero knowledge proof, the SNARK proof. But there's also a secret key that is known only to your phone, which has to be used to make an additional ECDSA signature before that money can be spent. So that way, this would unfortunately disclose to that server who you're paying and how much, but it wouldn't give that server the ability to spend or lose your money.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds interesting.
So that would be an improvement.
It's nice because what it made me think of, like loads of like Bitcoin light clients providers, they say, okay, we do stuff on our server and you have a light client, but your keys are with you.
Yep.
But they still have a server.
That's right.
And what I was always dreaming of for messaging, for instance, and maybe one day I'm going to make it myself, I don't know. But as a non-advanced user, I'd like it to be like a thing. I download an app and it's my wallet or my messaging app. And then together with that, I get a little cute box, like a little Raspberry Pi or whatever, which is my server, which I plug at home and which does stuff for me.
Yeah.
So when I'm online, instead of connecting to it, connecting to, I don't know, Jack's servers, mm-hmm. is like, all respect to Jack's, but I have it in my house.
Yeah.
And what would be nice is you can actually do it through like a web page, because you just know that your web page connects to this little box which is in your house.
Yeah.
And that would be nice. And hopefully with like hardware wallets and all this kind of thing, there will be a paradigm where an app will come with a little box that will do stuff for you.
It's interesting you mentioned the hardware wallets. I'm a little bit skeptical about the paradigm because I have heard of it once or twice before, but I haven't seen it be commercially successful. That people buy a hardware device to run some network service for them.
Like some VPN devices are commercially successful. It depends if you like find a right crowd.
Well, there's also definitely commercially successful for business use, right? Mm. Businesses buy devices all the time. Consumers at home buy a router so they can get on the internet. For sure, they do that. But I'm not sure about them buying anything else until you mentioned the hardware wallets, because those do seem to be successful,
yes.
at least based on the fact that there are multiple companies selling those devices for Bitcoin users.
Yeah, you might as well just have a little server with your... If you also buy a device and it's so like that, 100, 200
this
euros.
This is intriguing. I haven't thought of this before just this moment, but yeah, what if one of those people like Trezor and KeepKey and Ledger,
yeah.
What if they offered you a device which was a bigger, more expensive device, but it also ran services for you? It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's intriguing. I don't know.
But then it needs power and network.
Well, yeah, it's totally a much bigger and much more expensive and complicated device.
So. I would like totally go for it. I don't mind talking about all this ideas and maybe someone stealing it, because I think it's nice. Because, you know, these hardware wallets, I mean, they're not only used in like crypto demographic scene. Also, people have these things to sign, like for instance...
YubiKey.
Yeah. And you have like things like in Denmark, you have this ID system, which is a national ID system. If you're a doctor, you can you train and you have like access to medical data of mm-hmm. people. You trained how to use what is essentially a hardware wallet.
Yeah.
So they're not just these devices don't just exist in the realm of crypto freaks. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this hardware Zcash server could use Tor, for example, to be as an onion service, and that would make it possible that it only needs an address via DHCP, via Wi-Fi. Okay, you have to enter the SSID and the Wi-Fi password so that it gets network, it gets power via whatever it needs for power.
Electricity. A plug.
Yeah, and it doesn't need a big screen. It just needs a screen to display the online address.
Yeah.
And then you put that into your client, and you can and whenever this thing has internet, you can use it. Yeah. Sounds
I'll totally
feasible.
Crowdfund that. Here's a hobby project for our listeners. would it run? Would like a Zcash node run on this ARM architecture? Can I run it on Raspberry Pi? Just to create and sign the transactions, not to mine?
It's not very good at... It's the creating the transactions is the computationally expensive part. And, I mean, actually, you could do it on a Raspberry Pi that's plugged into your home's main power mains. It would take a long time, like minutes, 3 or 5 minutes or something, to make one transaction. So you have to be willing to wait a few minutes, but that's fine. The reason you can't do it with the same kind of ARM chip in your phone is that it drains your battery while it does it. And that's not fine.
What I'm talking about, if I have a little app which only connects to my little Raspberry Pi, and my Raspberry Pi does my Zcash transactions for me, and when they're done and signed, created and signed, then I receive a notification, okay, now it's done and your money is sent. So this Raspberry Pi knows what's going on. But yeah, if I have a, like, if I have a cold storage wallet which is on my Raspberry Pi, it's already like secure. If someone breaks in, they know stuff, you know? So the idea is not that, the idea is just on an assumption that no one's going to actually break into your house and look into it, you know? Because usually with light clients, or not light clients, online wallets, I have to trust someone, someone's server, all these payment processors which integrate different coins. That's what they do. They just run a node for you and your app connects to it and you sign. Yeah.
So that's more vulnerable. Well, I'd be very interested to see an attempt to crowdfund something along those lines. There have been crowdfunding attempts for like hardware Tor nodes, I think. Have there been? Oh, do you know, Dirk?
Could be. I don't know. I just use like the servers I rent.
I mean, I love the idea, but I don't know if there's enough people who love the idea enough that they would be willing to fund it. Yeah, and actually, such an idea, a hardware Zcash node, could also be a hardware Tor node.
Yeah, yeah.
Which would be interesting.
A friend of mine actually used to make. Now I'm like promoting my friends. He used to make Bitcoin nodes. He used to have this project. So he would make a node, because there are people selling Bitcoin nodes and Raspberry Pis for like 200 quid or something like that.
Yeah.
And he was doing it for the... So his crowdfunding campaign was that he would crowdfund only the SD card, the Raspberry Pi, the little case for it, the little fan. And he would take a commission, because he has to put it together.
Yeah, right.
So he paid himself exact amount of money that... what is called Foxconn factory worker makes.
That's a
he group. Sat in front of the camera for days and just did it and ate like rice and a bit of green tea all day. And it was a very cute campaign.
It's a good bit of
performance
and art. And also, I love it, because it was also a crowdfunding campaign. Can you give us a link to that?
Yeah, I totally reference that. And he's still, I think the idea was to create like 5 or 10% of all nodes, of all Bitcoin nodes, is like in the story of a girl making what it's called, paper birds or something. But that's a different story I can reference. I will totally reference it. It's a cute project.
Okay. And I'm also interested if we know of references to anywhere you can go and buy a hardware Tor node or a hardware... server of some kind, like you were saying, that has a web
like
page.
A freedom box or something.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I've heard about those ideas and loved the ideas for many years now, but I'm not sure if there's any that are actually sort of available.
I think freedom box, I didn't use it, but it's a bit too nerdy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now with all this, like, I mean, let's say DigitalOcean, I mean, I'm totally like, actually, they're not sponsoring us. I have no clue. But if I want a server which does certain stuff, click, 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 I get something at least. I can set something up.
Yeah.
And
but you don't control the hardware.
You don't control the hardware. But what I'm saying is, like, for the past few years, is like, few years ago, if I needed a server, I will, like, call my friends and it's like, oh, please set it up for me. And now I can at least get something pretty easily if I want to.
Yes.
And same with hardware, because like Freedom Box is quite an old project. It's existed for a while. It's kind of targeting nerds, and it's also this kind of demographic which thinks that everyone knows how to set up a server.
Okay.
But I'm thinking about freaking Tamagotchi, which just like I press the button and the install is there. And if I want to get nerdy, I can go and check the source code and make sure that there's no bullshit on it.
But do you know of the existence of such a turnkey
No, I don't.
One button bit of hardware that someone will sell you. Okay, well, me neither.
Well, I would be interested. So you said it's probably around 3 or 4 minutes to calculate a transaction. What would this box need to do this faster?
Well, the very best thing. Ooh, yeah, that's a very good question. I like that. Because the answer is the very best thing it would have to do this faster is an FPGA.
Okay.
And those are very inexpensive nowadays, I think.
Yeah.
You don't need
thanks
much
to Bitcoin, right? Thanks to Bitcoin also.
Oh, I wonder if Bitcoin had much to do with that. Okay. I mean, FPGAs have been developing because they've been climbing Moore's Law.
Okay.
You know, CPUs kind of maxed out on Moore's Law like 5 years ago or something, but FPGAs hadn't yet maxed out on Moore's Law. So nowadays, FPGAs are very widely available. You can even, like, I guess there are some CPUs that just come with an FPGA built in, or at least they allegedly were going to have such CPUs. Even if you don't have one of those, maybe you could... This box, this hypothetical box that I wish someone else would crowdfund and produce, could come with an FPGA added on. And then if you had that, wow, that completely solves our performance problem. Then you can generate a Zcash transaction in like a microsecond.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong. So maybe my engineers will be mad at me for that number too. I should stop speaking.
Yeah, we will allow them to comment on the show.
get their comments. Yeah.
That would be really interesting. But such an FPGA device, does it need much input I/O, input output I/O, or could I have a smart card sized FPGA that I just, connect to my phone in a way? Would it need much I/O?
Is there a way to connect FPGAs to your phone? Like, can you? Your phone doesn't have a USB port on it.
It has USB. My phone has USB.
Your phone has USB?
Yeah.
My phone doesn't have USB, does it?
Not that what's your phone?
It's a Google Nexus 6P.
It should have. It has USB. You can put it into host mode, and then you can connect a USB stick.
Right. The power plug. That's the USB port, right?
Yeah.
It's a mini USB, right?
Yes. It's not the normal USB shape I'm used to. Okay, fine.
So
if I'm ignorant about lots of things, including phone hardware, basic hardware. You could probably, I guess, buy an FPGA USB stick and plug it into your phone. Your question was, would you need to do a whole lot of transmission of data in order to do that? No, I don't think so.
And also power, of course.
Yeah, power. I imagine that the power time and the amount of data would all be low for that application. Yeah. So imagine it would be possible to do a very usable USB attached.
Would this FPGA need access to the trusted setup?
It would need a copy of the public keys.
Yeah. So this is 2 gigabytes or what is it?
Yeah, it is something on the order of 1 or 2 gigabytes of public key. What's a good point? How would it do that? Yeah, that might be a technical challenge, how to use that large public key in the FPGA computation. It's a good question. So you could either drag it over the USB interface while computing, or have it somehow baked into the device
hardware.
if it's either the FPGA itself is big enough, or if you have some kind of ROM built into the device.
Hmm. So it might be possible, even with the current technology of Zcash, to have a hardware wallet that also does the computation for the transaction.
Well, yeah, that's a really good point. If you buy one of those hardware wallets that we mentioned from Ledger, Treasure, or whoever, in the future they could make one that is specialized for Zcash
and has all of this.
It can actually do this.
Well, I'm definitely going to talk to a couple of people who are into hardware wallets and see if
they are already working on it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You should invite them to be on your podcast.
Yeah. So, something I want to intervene with, which is a bit silly, if we were doing an video podcast, then I would be able to tell a joke about USB and the inventor of the USB funeral, but I'm not going to do that because it's going to be hard to explain.
Okay. Stay tuned for the video version.
Yes.
Of octahedron.
So, okay, so we spoke about this magic box that is possible to do, and it's probably a good hobby project, and I'm going to be definitely chatting to some people I know who are into this kind of stuff.
Maybe we'll see it at 34C3.
Also, the Dominic Tarr we had recently a podcast with, who's working on Scuttlebutt. Maybe we can bang the Scuttlebutt pub server on the same device, so it's just going to be
well, then it needs network and power all the time, so the
it doesn't need network all the time.
Okay, that's true.
Yeah, but listen to our previous episode and you will understand what I'm talking about. So so I'm going to slowly start wrapping up. So what
already?
What are the updates since the launch of Zcash?
What's happened to Zcash since the launch? Well,
like highlights, exciting stuff, updates, stuff you're comfortable talking about and that your engineer's not going to eat you alive.
A lot of stuff. The launch was kind of exhilarating and exhausting for me personally and probably for a lot of us because, you know, things got more and more intense month after month for a long time and sort of kept exceeding previous highs of intensity and effort and stress. And then the launch went off very smoothly, which was kind of incredible. Thanks to the highly professional engineering team. And then everything's been a blur ever since.
But it's running now, right?
Everything has been running smoothly. We've encountered many bugs. Both the annoying kind that make transactions fail to get confirmed most of the time or take a long time to get confirmed, or, you know, give confusing error messages and stuff like that. Also, the dangerous kind that could potentially be exploited with a lot of effort under very specialized circumstances to steal money or force a fork of the blockchain. So the engineering team has been hard at work diagnosing and fixing such bugs and upgrading complaints that users have about things taking too long, you know, or taking too much CPU or whatever. So it's kind of the mode we've been in. We just kind of, and we planned this, we expected to be in this situation, is that after the launch, we just spend a few months just doing that, like maintenance, like responding to bugs.
How many people are on the team?
About a dozen, depending on how you count.
And how come, what was the secret? Because everyone's raving about how awesome this team is.
Yeah.
And what was the secret to, like, because there's oftentimes you have an awesome team and maybe people with big egos and then they fall out or something. And how come?
Like Ethereum?
Like Ethereum, I'm not supposed to mention it. I'm actually using the office, right? I love Ethereum. Ethereum, I love you. So where was I? You made me blush.
You have a theme with people who are really awesome and they also have big egos and fall out.
Mm. So far, your team is not falling out and everyone is dedicated. What do you think? Is it this cypherpunk stuff that people really trying to solve a huge problem of privacy, like what the magic?
That is probably a part of what's going on, is that there's a lot of shared values and a shared sense of mission, not only within like our company, the employees of the company, but also in the Zcash community. We started out by emphasizing, like, why are we doing this? It's sort of the number one most important thing to communicate and remember, and so there's a nice sort of backstop of if people have disagreements about strategy or technology or whatever, they tend to feel like they have common shared goals. Anyway, your question is, why have we not had other such fallings out? I don't know. If people have differing goals about how to do things, they can do it separately too.
Maybe also because you didn't get this big of attention, right?
Yeah.
And the big crowdfunding that Ethereum got. But
yeah, we're just a lot smaller than Ethereum in terms of how much money is riding on it and how many people are working on it full time and how many sort of, what's the word? Audience members are like shouting out in the comments section.
Yeah.
So maybe if we become more and more widely used and more important, then we'll have fallings out.
Yeah, but that's natural.
Yeah.
I guess. I have a specific question about bucks. So I'm using this mining software. I think it's called NHEC Miner or something. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about, but, and they, on their website, they say you can only have a payout to a transparent address because of some bug they don't explain.
Oh yeah, I remember
Do
that.
You know what's up with that?
Well, I don't know 100% sure which bug they mean, because there was a bug in, I think it was in 1.0 and then it was fixed in 1.0.1. Or maybe it was fixed in 1.0.2. But anyway, there was a bug quite a few weeks back. And they put that notice up when we announced that bug. But that bug is long since fixed. But maybe they're talking about a different bug.
Yeah, okay.
Or maybe they're wrong.
Yeah, they
maybe
still have it on their
they
site,
just haven't upgraded to the fixed version.
Okay, what was the bug? I'd be interested.
Why can they not...
Yeah.
There have been several bugs. I'm not sure if the one I was thinking of when that I said that was fixed a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Which one was that? It was a bug that.
Okay.
I think what they said is there's a bug that prevents Z addresses from working. That's why we're using T addresses. There was a bug which was fixed more recently as 1.0.4 or so, that caused Z addresses to get treated as too low priority and too low transaction fee, so they tended to not get mined in some circumstances.
So it could take longer for them to get mined. That would be not in the interest of miners that mine in a pool. Yeah,
it actually would have if the miners would still have gotten transaction fees if they had changed their configuration or something.
Yeah, but this is about the payout, right? It's not about the fee for the or the reward. The reward is not pay when I participate in a pool. I give them the address they should do the payout to.
Yeah,
and this address is not the address that the block reward is paid to, not directly at least. I mean, they in their address and then they pay out to me.
Right.
So if that takes longer, I, as a miner, am not incentivized to mine with them. I would go with another miner that gives me the payout earlier. So that makes sense that they wouldn't want that and that they would say use a transparent address. And it's totally fine to use a transparent address, although... No, wait. Let me think about this. If I don't tell anyone this transparent address except the miner, then I'm not identified in any way, or then no one can check how much Zcash I have, right? The miner can,
right?
But they, in the end, know the address they have to pay out to anyway. Because otherwise they could, even if it was a Z address, they would know which address they paid to. And the first thing I do is transfer the funds from a T address to a Z address.
Right.
And then transfer them somewhere else. So it shouldn't be a privacy problem to mine to a T address.
This is something we should talk about because it's complicated, actually. Yeah. Like, you're basically right at what you said, except also this is revealing to random other people, like everyone who can see the blockchain.
That there was something
the patterns, mined. Right? Like the the frequency and the amount that this one address is receiving.
Yeah.
And so that could be important information depending on your particular case. Or it could be fine.
Yeah.
So it would be better... if inhic or whatever they're called could send directly to your Z address, we should. It would be nice if we would talk to them. If you work for inhic miner, please contact us and let's talk.
Let me check. Maybe it changed already. Are,
if any.
But I have another.
Because either we've fixed it and they don't know about it or aren't using our fix yet, or there's a different problem and we don't know about it. So we should talk.
Yeah, maybe they changed. Okay, I have to find out later.
But in general, it's an interesting question, which it's sort of surprisingly complicated if you say, is it okay to use a T address for this purpose? There's two answers that are absolutely wrong. One is, if you use a T address, you don't get any privacy. And it turns out that's actually wrong, because like Dirk was saying, if you use a T address, but then whenever someone sends you money, what you do is you send it to your Z address or to someone else's Z address or whatever, then you actually can get potentially quite a lot of privacy, but depends on the circumstances. So the other address that, or the other simplification that's absolutely wrong is to say, if you use a T address and then you also, you know, send it to a Z address, then you get all the privacy you need. That is also potentially wrong. That might not be enough depending on the circumstances. So it's unfortunately that gray area of not really like full power privacy and also not like completely unsafe. That's a really difficult area to assess.
Because there's a correlation comes in it as well. If you send from T address to Z address, the same one, and that's right. Whatever.
Correlation and what they call...
Correlation is evil.
Yeah, correlation can reveal so much about you in certain circumstances and not in others. Like if you're getting payouts for mining and you're sending it to someone's Z address, that's great. But then what if... they are then revealing it. They're sending it to a T address because they're buying something. And every time you send the money, then they immediately turn around and buy something. Well, unbeknownst to you and unbeknownst to them, that's exposing, because that's exposing the fact that you're their customer, right? Even though you and them are using a Z address with each other. But the fact that you're revealing something and they're revealing something would potentially allow a third party to put two and two together and learn about the relationship between you two.
Well, then it's always like how much of a hassle it is to correlate.
Yeah, and so that really is very hard to analyze. And, you know, nobody... we want privacy to be something that normal people get by default, right? Privacy is a social value, and it protects you from criminals and thieves and spies. So,
and bullying. Hmm? Bullying, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. So it's really not, I'm really not comfortable with the big complicated gray area where a very sort of sophisticated expert analysis would let you know how to use the thing safely. Therefore, I would really like to make Z addresses more and more the efficient, stable, widely supported, etc. So that people can just use Z addresses all the time, because that's kind of the appeal of Zcash as contrasted with other things like Bitcoin and other also... Zcash is, you can contrast it with other privacy focused cryptocurrencies and tools and systems by saying that if everyone in the system, everyone involved is using Z addresses for everything, then it's simple again. Then you can basically just say the blockchain is not leaking information about
us. After you said that, now I don't want a transparent transaction from you. I give you some cash.
When we started this conversation, you wanted a transparent.
No, never. I'll give you some cash, and then we'll figure out how you're gonna send me some Zcash on at the current price at this day. But we will need to wrap up soon,
no,
right?
No, wait a second. Okay. By the way, it was the pool was Flypool, and the mining software is nhackminer. Mm. So, and they are still saying on their website that with version 1.03, is that the newest version? Mm. I think I have seen references to 1.04 already.
Yeah, 1.04. Yeah,
they say that it's still not possible to have payouts to Z addresses. So they should contact you to find out.
I'll see if I can.
What the reason is, and something else. When I was using Zcash during the beta, so when do you have to leave? In 5 minutes?
Yeah, in a few minutes.
Okay. Yeah. When I was using Zcash at the beta time, mining was also done to T addresses, as I remember, and is that still true? Mining, not pool mining, but signal mining.
No, the address you put in to receive the block reward when you're doing mining, that is a T address. But there's a special rule that when the money moves from that address, it has to go to a Z address.
Ah, interesting. And also all at once, right? The amount doesn't matter. You send everything. At least that was during the beta phase. I mined, and then I had some funds on the T address, and when I moved these to a Z address, I had to move everything, so the amount wouldn't matter. I would always move everything. The T address would be empty after.
I think that's correct.
Do you know why?
Well, why you have to move it to a Z address, or why you can't move only part of it?
Yeah, why I can't the letter.
I'm 92% sure that that's because it would have been more complicated to specify a consensus rule that allowed change to go to it.
To a mining address.
Like the point, they are special, the point, right? Of the rule is we want to make sure that all the mined Zcash goes into the privacy set.
Okay.
Right? You know the concept of a privacy set, also known by academics as an anonymity set, is that the set of all things that you gain privacy by mingling with a crowd, right? Okay. So the size of the crowd really matters. If there's only a few people in the crowd, you don't really gain privacy. You have to have a big crowd to gain privacy. So in Zcash, when you make a transaction, let's say 10 Zcash gets transferred from a shielded address, and it goes to a public address. And you might question to yourself, well, how many different earlier transactions could this 10 Zcash have come from?
Yeah.
Where could it have come from? Well, because of that rule, which requires all mining rewards to go to a shielded address, because of the existence of that rule, the 10 Zcash that you are looking at could have come from any miner ever.
Okay.
See what I'm saying?
Well, that has mined at least 10 Zcash.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Okay.
So, as well as it could have come from any other transaction ever that involved at least 10 Zcash. So the privacy set in Zcash is very large. Like the number of possible transactions that could have been the origin of this one is sort of the largest possible set. Does that make sense?
This is a
big difference from other privacy technologies where the answer might be something like, well, this here transaction, it must have come from one of these 10 transactions that just happened a minute ago.
But on the other hand, it's not possible to mine to a Z address because of technical reasons.
Oh, that's correct. Mainly because it's so expensive to produce those. I think that's why. But it's technical reasons, exactly. Yeah. It would have been conceptually simpler and would have had the same effect if we just required you to mine to a Z address in the first place.
Yeah.
But then it's a cultural layer. So basically, if you mine, just try to send everything to Z addresses that you mined, and then you'll be fine.
What? I didn't understand what you said about culture.
I mean, that's a social layer. It's not a technical layer.
It is a There is currently a technical rule that means your transactions are rejected by the consensus if they go from a miner's original T address to anything other than a Z address.
Ah, right. So it is enforced.
Yes.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Cool.
So therefore, your anonymity set is all transactions ever plus every miner ever.
Mm.
That's the set of possible sources. Anytime you're wondering where the source of some Zcash could have come from.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we have to
wrap
cut it off. I could talk for another hour.
Yeah.
Maybe next time.
But you have to run, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe so. you will be in Berlin anytime.
Yeah, I
in
intend
the
to be in Berlin again many times.
So. Yeah. Cool. Then we talk about health as well because we didn't ask you personal questions, but next time.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you
for being here after New Year's Eve.
Please edit this and remove all the parts where I was wrong or stupid.
Okay, no. I will try to find anything, but usually we don't cut anything.
Oh, yeah, so. That's fine. I was just kidding.
Okay.
Leave all those parts out.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you
bye,
very
everyone.
Much. And
bye.
Bye.